Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today. So let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm Pat Sloan, and today is going to be an exciting trip around the land of quilting because we're going to be talking applique and piecing and all different kinds of fibers. Plus, we'll have a little thing at the end, the last segment, about travel and sewing. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Roseanne Kermes is back on to talk about that. So first I have on Missy Carpenter of Hallbrook Designs. Now, I was so lucky to meet Missy in person earlier this year. She was at one of my workshops. Her applique and her designs are just incredible. She mixes wools and cottons. She does needle punch, all kinds of fabulous things. She has English paper piecing in some of her projects. So I just thought it would be really great to have her come on and talk about her work. It's really personal, and I love that part. We're going to talk about that. So hi, Missy.
Hi, Pat.
It's so good to talk to you again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you talking with me today.
Now, tell me, have you always sewn and stitched? Because, you know, your work is so gorgeous.
Thank you. I've sewn, you know, about as long as I can remember. The first time I remember sewing, I was about 9 years old, and my friend and I would make, believe it or not, clothing for our 3-inch troll dolls.
Oh, my gosh.
Remember those little Wishnick trolls?
I had those.
Yep. That was pretty much the first thing that I started sewing on. I've asked my mom recently if she taught me how to do those things or what, and she said, nope, you just did it.
So, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, now but those, there's little Peter Pan collars and hemmed dresses and gathers and cuffs on the sleeves, so I enjoy looking at those.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. Now, you actually took what you started when you were a little girl and went and got a college, you know, degree in the fashion industry, you know, from troll clothing to fashion. Hey.
Right. Fashion merchandising was my major, and thought I would go to New York and be a buyer for a store, but, you know, didn't really know much about it when I picked out that major and fell in love, and he didn't live in New York City. He lived in Lawrence, Kansas. So
he wasn't going to New York. Huh?
Right. So I've ended up, you know, taking it into my life now by doing something always with sewing and being able to be home and be a stay-at-home mom with my kids.
That's fantastic. Now, you know, at what point, Missy, did you discover quilting, you know, because you were making clothing and, you know, what did you have quilts in your family?
I don't remember a lot of quilts in my family. You know, I had bedspreads store-bought on my bed, and I remember a few quilts that my grandmother made, but it really wasn't a major part of my life when I was younger. When my daughter was born, I ended up quitting work a few months after I went back to work, you know, after maternity leave, and I got bored really quick, and I said, oh, Mom, I don't think I can do this, and she suggested that I go try to find a class to take and learn something. Mm-hmm. So a friend of mine also had a baby, and she was taking a quilting class. So I joined her, and that's how I got started.
Wow. I think so many people, I've said this before, but so many people make their first quilts have something to do with babies,
yes.
You know, for gifts or for their own. Now, one of the things I love, describe to me what your style of quilting is. It's so warm and cozy and personal.
Thank you. I would say that I am traditional, but yet I have a twist of primitive or folk art mixed in with that traditional. It's just kind of a mixture of everything. My favorite quilts are never just one block repeated. It's got a lot of different techniques mixed up together in the same quilt.
And you love detail. You have a lot of detail in your pieces.
Yes, I do. I enjoy fine shapes, I guess. Not so much perfect shapes, but descriptive shapes, I guess, would be a better way to say that.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that fascinated me when I met you and I was seeing your work is that you will take and combine, like, your, like, the English paper piecing with this gorgeous applique, and then, like, your Life in the Midwest quilt has these huge sunbursts on it.
Yes.
How do you think up combining all those different elements? Because it's different.
It just sort of happens, I guess. With life in the Midwest, I started with the Hexies, and I just worked on them at a slow pace. I took them to my sewing group every week and just worked on them whenever I had a chance and whenever I felt like it. So I wasn't really having a deadline or trying to hurry. I just enjoyed it. When I had enough that I thought would work for something, didn't know what, I kind of put it aside and started thinking about what to do with it, knowing that I wanted to put it in the middle of a larger quilt.
Okay. So you sort of had that in mind after you got going. That
right.
It would...
Still not knowing what I was going to put around the outside. And was taking my daughter to camp in northwest Iowa, and it's just very rural out there. And I kept seeing the silos with the tile at the top that sort of look like quilts, and that just sort of popped in my head that, oh, I should do these barn quilts and silos with the tile that sort of look like quilts and sort of applique something that has to do with farming and country life on, around the outside of it.
Now, you also made this even more personal because it sort of represents things about your life.
Yes, it did sort of evolve that way. My husband works in the agricultural industry, and I was not a big city girl, but a city girl, and didn't really know anything about crops or country life or fields or any, I didn't even know what an acre was probably, I just learned a lot over the years being married with him. And, as I started thinking about barn quilts and the silos, it led me to think about the sunflower fields that we would see in South Dakota when we lived there and the wheat fields and how pretty they were as we would drive through the country. He works in the corn and, soybean industry right now, so those aspects are hidden in this quilt as well. And then other little things I added on were things that are special to all of us, like the Americana looking star and the house and church and quilt shop, of course. Those types of things are in there as well.
Yeah, I like that all the little buildings. Did you sketch them out first? What is your process for that?
I just kind of draw it on a piece of paper and decide what size I want it, kind of maybe sketch up one house and put it up next to those hexagon flowers and kind of see, is this too big or too small? And then maybe I might change it a little bit. That's kind of how I do it. A lot of times the houses that I use have been looking a little bit like houses that I've lived in. I think that's kind of fun to add my own personal little niche in there. And a quilt shop, the blue quilt shop. There's been probably three places I've lived, there's been a blue quilt shop. So that had to be blue.
It had to be blue. Yep. You know, that's really interesting because there's somebody who wants to do a quilt similar to this to put like their own personality into it. How would they, you know, would you suggest that they make, you know, like a little list of things that are important and then look for that thread that's similar?
Yeah, that would be a way to start, I suppose. And part of how I did this was I started at the bottom and built my way up. So the things going up are a little bit more narrow and a little bit smaller. So, you know, if you have smaller things that maybe, not that mean less, but maybe aren't quite the heart of your home, you know, the heart of your life, put them sort of at the top versus at the bottom near the heart. I also suggested if they have the pattern, I said I would be happy to draw a little something that's different for, you know, say I did sell one in Australia recently and I, you know, hope that that person, she certainly won't want an American star on hers. So, you know, maybe there's something else that I could sketch for her quickly to, you know, let her replace that. So.
Oh, that's a neat idea because it is. I did a project once where the Canadians switched out, put the Canadian flag instead of the American flag. Yeah. Now, let's talk about hexies a bit because, you know, hexagons are, you know, they ebb and flow in popularity. They never go away. I think they're huge again. What is your personal technique for doing them? And you like little hexagons.
Well, they aren't really little to me. 5/8 inch is my favorite size.
And that's the one that's across one edge, right?
That's right, across one side of it. And that's my favorite size to work with. Sometimes I'll work with 1 inch, and rarely do I go much smaller than 5/8. But, you know, I've been through the process. One of the first projects I ever chose to sew on when I started handwork back in the probably early 90s was hexagons with English paper piecing. Mm-hmm. And I've used the techniques through the years of the traditional basting. Then I was on vacation when I started life in the Midwest, and I didn't have any supplies. So I ended up using a glue stick, and that worked pretty well. Well, now I've moved on to using starch to prepare the edges. And then you press the starch over the shape, and that way it holds the shape. You take out the paper, and you don't have the paper to mess with while you're sewing.
Oh, hey,
so
that's really neat.
Yeah, it's very easy to hold. It doesn't, you know, how when you have the paper in hand, sometimes it's a little bit difficult to hold it if you want to keep the papers in the whole time while you're sewing. But other people work around that by removing it after all the sides are sewn together. Mm-hmm. They will remove those papers as they go, and that works good too. Mm-hmm. But I've just gotten recently to where I enjoy using the starch.
Now, do you use liquid starch or?
Yes, just out of a spray can and a little bitty paintbrush. Just paint it around the edge of the freezer paper and then iron it till it's dry with one of those small irons.
Mm-hmm.
And it just works real well. It holds the shape until you wet it.
I like that. Oh, my goodness.
And one little thing, you do have to take a smaller bite with your needle. Mm-hmm. You have to concentrate on that until you get in the habit, because that paper isn't there to stop your needle from going too deeply.
Oh.
So you do just have to train your brain to take a small bite in that fabric as you're stitching the sides together.
Oh, okay. That's a good point, actually, because if people are used to doing it with a firmness in there,
they're
probably not even realizing that you're hitting it.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Tricky,
and there's
tricky.
Times that I still enjoy the glue stick method and the traditional as well, too. So, you know, I haven't cut those methods out totally. I just enjoy this one the most right now.
Ah, well, that's really great. Now, tell me, we have just a half a minute.
Okay.
When you go to a quilt show, what do you look at first?
Oh, gosh, I always tend to look at fabrics first. Got to have more fabrics. And then I look at the quilts, too, of course.
Of course. Well, Missy, tell everybody your website so they can come visit you.
Okay, my website is www.hallbrookdesigns, and that's like a hallway in a house, hallbrookdesigns.com.
Well, this has been wonderful. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Pat. I sure enjoyed it.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back in a minute.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, hello, Luscious by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Get quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox. Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I don't think that any of us can get enough knowledge about scrap quilts because we have scraps. We don't want to throw them away. We want to use them. And the gamut of available projects for our scraps is, it's just endless. And I'm always finding great new designers or new to me designers or new to you designers that are doing things with scrap quilts. So I have got Joan Ford on, who is of Scrap Therapy. Her website is called Scrap Therapy dash, or that's her blog, sorry, Hummingbird Highway. Well, anyways, Joan, this is a fabulous, fabulous thing, using scraps, and you have Scrap Therapy. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Pat.
Now, how did you start to quilt?
Well, it kind of fell into it about 10 years ago. I got a sewing machine from my husband for Christmas. I actually am a knitter. And I wanted to find a way to use my sewing machine for something other than just real quick projects. I like to make complicated sweaters, and you finish them off with some sewing. But I had the sewing machine, and I thought, I gave Brenda a call, and she suggested I take a quilting class, and that's where it started about 10 years ago.
Aha, aha. Did you just dive in and go crazy?
Did I dive in? Yeah. Before too long, I was making quilts like crazy. You know, I had that aha moment we all have when we first start quilting. You make your first quilt block, you open it up, and I was just hooked. And so I started making quilts with a vengeance. I was working full time. The local shop where I was taking the classes recognized that I was producing these quilts pretty quickly, so they had me working on some projects for them and samples for the store and designing some really simple projects. So I started making a lot of quilts really fast and generated some scraps as a result.
Right. You know, I read in one of you have two books, Cut the Scraps and Scraps Plus One, both using your scrap therapy. And I read in there that I want you to describe to me how you had like an aha moment that happened about scraps.
Yeah, well, of course, when you start making quilts, you generate the scraps, and you've got these leftover pieces, and you just don't know what to do with them. Well, I went to a quilt guild meeting, and one of the women in the area had passed away, and she was a sewer, and her family brought her quilts her scrap fabrics to the guild meeting, and several of the guild members just kind of piled on and dispersed her scraps. And I thought, man, this is going to happen to me someday. All my scraps that I've chosen so carefully, that I've made things from, you know, they're all memories attached to them. And I thought, you know what, my system isn't working. I thought I was pretty well organized, and I had my scraps really well organized by color, but I hadn't gone far enough to get organized to be able to use them. And so I decided that it was time. You know, it's kind of like having a kitchen sink full of dirty dishes. Eventually, you got to hit them and get them clean and clean up the kitchen. So it's kind of how I felt about the scraps.
I love the scrap therapy. I mean, that's your gig, your tagline. So what is it exactly? What system did you end up coming up with that works for you?
Well, I decided, again, when I had that moment and I decided it was time to do something, I did some research and I found that there were lots of suggestions of ways to use scraps, but I needed something really simple. I needed it to make sense. It needed to be logical, and I needed it to be really, really easy. So I decided to cut my scraps into three square sizes that play well together. And the logic there was that I didn't want to have lots of strips and all these little pieces, because I already had cut-up pieces, and I didn't want to have to go digging for the perfect size every time I wanted to make a scrappy quilt.
Yeah, and that's what I think stops a lot of people.
I think if I have those three sizes, it's very simple, 2, 3.5, and 5-inch squares, if I have an inventory of scraps cut up in those sizes, and especially now with the two books, there's, 40-some patterns mm-hmm. that you can just dig in and start sewing.
Yeah, I think that the simple part is really what got me. When I read your stuff, I'm like, that really clicked with me, Joan, because I don't, you know, sometimes you just want to sit down and make something. You know, you don't want to plan it too much, you know, and having it all in this, that simple sizes is fantastic. What question do most people ask you? I mean, what question do you get asked the most?
Well, people know that I organize my scraps into those three sizes, and I think they expect that I have, you know, shoebox-sized bins, which is what I like to store them in, up to the mm-hmm. ceiling, and I really don't. I kind of cut as I need them. I have maybe three or four bins that are full of the three sizes, and mm-hmm. I'll make a few quilts, and things will look a little thin, and I'll cut some more scraps up. I always have like a big bin of scraps that I haven't cut up yet, ready to be sized down. So I really only have three or four boxes of scraps, not whole closets full and rooms full, and I can actually walk into my sewing room and not be tripping over boxes of cut-up scraps.
And you also make quilts. I mean, you don't just talk about it. I mean, you love to make them, so you're actively always making, from what I gather from reading your
oh,
your
yeah,
books.
I do. I love the entire process. I think quilting is such a wonderful hobby, and there should be absolutely nothing associated with quilting that has to do with guilt. And when you have all these scrap fabrics that are accumulating, you feel bad. You know, every bit about the process is something I love doing. I enjoy the process of selecting the colors, selecting the fabric, selecting the memories, making yeah. the process. And one of the things that's so cool about scrappy quilts is there's so much variety. I had no idea when I decided to cut the scraps into those three squares mm-hmm. that there would be such variety available to me. Of course, I add other fabrics, so I'm not one of those people that says, all right, it's got to come completely from your stash in order mm-hmm. for it to be a scrappy quilt. I'm a quilter. I love to go fabric right. shopping. I love to buy fabrics, and I like to incorporate some of the old stuff with some of the new stuff.
Now, do you have a bit of advice for people who are sort of like me, who don't have a lot of storage space? I mean, I just do not have storage space. A very small house. I run a business in it. You know, do you have a way that people with limited storage can sort of do this scrap therapy?
Well, I have found that the cut up scraps takes so much less space mm-hmm. than the messy scraps. So, again, I think it's all about getting down to a system, getting digging in and starting. Mm-hmm. The messy scraps in bunches and wads, yeah. they really do take a lot of space. And when you cut them, you're also eliminating the little shreds, the little pieces that are just too small to save. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing that, you're finding your way into a much more organized and more, I think, more space-conducive environment. I have found that not only do I use my scraps for the patterns that I write and the things that I make, mm-hmm. but you don't have to just use those. I like to say the plop and sew method. You can plop yourself in front of the sewing machine and just dig into those square sizes. They work well together, so you can just make a scrappy quilt for a charity project or a guild event right. or a birthday or, you know, an event of any sort. And so, you know, there they go out the door when they were
out
doing
the
nothing.
Door. That's good. We want them out the door.
Got to place the new stuff, too.
Right, because you also you like to have a little bit more control over the colors you put in your scrap quilts, if that's the right way to phrase it. Well, how
yeah.
do you approach that so that, you know, you're not like the wild, you know, everything goes in one quilt kind of
Yeah, you know, quilter. It's so funny because 10 years ago when I did start quilting, I really didn't like scrappy quilts. I guess I have to confess that because what I felt was a scrappy quilt incorporated plaids with wild colors and, you know, older fabrics with newer fabrics. And I don't necessarily like that combination. Some people do, and that's fine. But for me, I like a coordinated scrappy. And again, by having that inventory of scraps ready to go. I can pick and choose once I decide on the theme. And that's all incorporated in the books. I talk about that when I talk about the seven steps in both of the books.
In both the books.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Cut the scraps and scraps plus one. Both of those have that step by step. Now, okay, before we finish, because we're almost done, what is the smallest size piece that you don't cut up? I mean, at what point do you decide, okay, I'm going to cut this or I'm not going to cut it? I'm going to wait.
Well, I like to store, what I cut and store is anything 2 inches or bigger. And so my smallest scrap size that I store and stack and save and use is 2 inches. Now, that doesn't mean that sometimes I'll take my 2-inch scrap squares and cut them and do some smaller things with them. The cover quilt on the second book has little 1-inch squares, but that all results in taking my 2-inch squares and cutting them twice. Mm. I consider my 2-inch square a storage unit for 4 1-inch squares, and my 5-inch square a storage unit for 2 or 4 2.5-inch squares. So just because I cut them into those square sizes doesn't mean they stay in that size for the quilting.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, that's a neat way to think about it. I like that, Joan. So this has been this has been great. I want to tell people your website again, hummingbird-highway.com, hummingbirdhighway.com, and you can visit Joan's blog from there. So, Joan, thank you for being on.
Thanks so much, Pat. It was great chatting.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll take a little break and be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by BabyLock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts & More magazines. Go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have Amanda Murphy on. She's a graphic designer who's taken her artwork and put it on fabric and created quilts for quilt books. I mean, it's just wonderful, wonderful things. And I'm so excited because I want to find out a little bit about how Amanda works, you know, what's really, you know, going on in the life of Amanda Murphy. So here she is. Hi, Amanda. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is really fun. You, you know, your work is gorgeous.
Thank you very much.
Now, did you study art, or are you just, you know, gifted? I mean, you just always drew as a kid?
I studied, believe it or not, I hate to admit this, industrial design. But I never actually did industrial design. I did multimedia and art direction, and then I moved into the quilting world.
Ah, so did you design bridges when you say industrial?
Like, things like cell phones before there were cell phones.
Oh, okay.
You know, like industrial objects, three-dimensional things. It's that mass art mix, you know, that I really like, and that's common to quilting, too, I think. So, that's kind of where I got interested in it.
Now, how did you sort of get over into the world of quilting? Because, you know, was it a hobby or...?
Yes, it was a hobby. I always loved to sew things, and I actually sewed before I quilted, and then I found quilting, which is just, I mean, it takes that, you know, the art from my graphics art background and kind of marries it to working with fabric, so I just found the medium I love.
Now, who is your fabric with?
My fabric is with Blend Fabrics, which is a subsidiary of Anna Griffin.
Okay. And Blend has, you know, they have other artists, just like all the fabric houses besides Anna Griffin's fabric.
Yes.
You have several lines. You've been designing fabric for a while now.
Yeah, I think I've, this is my sixth line, I think, that just came out. My two most recent lines are Holiday Bouquet, which is sort of a mix of modern and traditional fabrics, and that's a Christmas collection. That's actually what I'm sewing on right now. And then Bonjour Mon Ami, which is inspired by all things French, and it's a little bit traditional, a little bit modern, just a mix. And I like to go back and forth between fabric and quilt design. So when I'm designing a line, I'm also designing quilts at the same time. I don't always know where they'll end up, but I come back to the fabric, make scale changes, and then go back into the quilts.
Oh, how neat. Yeah, so you are sort of the patterns, quilt patterns are sort of independent, and then you eventually put fabric in them.
Yes.
Oh, neat. Okay.
But a lot of times one's inspired by the other. You know, we all kind of work in all fields. So a lot of times, you know, that's how you might decide you need a bigger print in this, you know, because the quilt calls for it. So when you really have to work with the fabrics, I find that I think you can get a more solid collection by kind of planning quilts out as you design the fabric.
Yeah, I love to hear how people think through that process, because we all do it so differently, you know, marrying the patterns with the fabric that we're designing. Tell me your process for designing fabric. Do you do little sketches, do mood boards?
Yes, I don't do mood board. I guess I don't do a lot of mood boards, except I definitely am thinking about a collection for many months before I actually draw it. So I guess in my head I sort of have an idea of where I'm going to go. And then I keep sketches, and those sketches are scanned into a computer where I actually take a graphics tablet and draw on top of my sketch. I would take it and put it at a low opacity and kind of draw. I find for me it's still easier with a pencil just to get the general shapes, even though I do work with a graphics tablet. So I draw it, and then I do all the color on the computer once it's drawn in layers.
Yeah, it's and I love – sort of describe your color palettes.
I guess lately I've had a lot of aquas and greens. I jump all over the place. But I guess I like color. Mm-hmm. And so my things are bright, but they're not – really primary colors. And again, I do like to jump around a lot. My last collection, Bonjour Mon Ami, actually has a little bit of the browns with the greens and the aquas.
Oh, okay.
A little bit of pink to kind of ground it. But it just, I love playing with color. I think all quilters love playing with color. I think it's
a
commonality.
I mean, you can't get enough color, can you? Just, you know, shades and differences. And you do a lot of your designs. You know, you have some intricate, some are more open. So they have a sort of a balance of density, I guess would be a word.
Thank you. I try. I love fabric, though. I love it all. I love the traditional. I love the modern. And I like to use it all.
And you use it all. That's right. Well, your site is amandamurphydesign.com, and people can go there. You have a tab that says fabric, so they can go and look at your fabric and your patterns or under products. Let's talk about your book, Modern Holiday.
Yes, that is my first book with CNT Publishing.
Yay!
And I just got a box of books last week, so it's just starting to ship, and it'll be in quilt shops, shipping to quilt shops really soon. And it is 18 holiday projects, 9 of which are quilts, and they're all used kind of modern Christmas fabric collection. Some of the fabrics aren't just Christmas, though. And then it also has tree skirts, stockings, all different types of home decor projects, as well as the quilts.
And you mix applique and piecing. So you know, you have some projects with some applique, and then you have some that are just pieced.
Yes. And some that are a mix, yeah. And I have little techniques like very simple trapunto techniques, and there's just some accents. You know, I have some things that use yo-yos, and I have one Dresden plate quilt in there. So it's a bunch of different techniques, and that's what I really enjoy, I mean, really learning from other quilters and learning new techniques. I find you never know when you're going to use them in a quilt later on.
Now, I know there's always something. Did you listen earlier, or if you didn't hear it, you have to go back and hear Missy talk about using starch for the hexagons, because that's new for me. So
that's new for me too. I've never tried that. So that'll be something on my list.
something new. Now, how did you go about planning for the book? Because one of the things that I read was that you had a vision when you started out. You're a graphic artist, so you really have a strong style and look for your work. How did you approach the book?
Well, the book actually grew. When I told you I developed fabric and quilts mm-hmm. in tandem, and a lot of times I don't know where those quilts will end up. I may not use them. I may use them in a pattern. I may use them for a magazine. And most of the quilts started with a Christmas fabric collection that was underway at the time. Mm-hmm. And I just decided to submit them as a book. C&T had stopped by my booth at Market, and I decided, well, you know, I haven't seen a modern Christmas book yet, so mm-hmm. I decided to submit them as a collection. And that's where the book grew. And we went back and forth. We thought about putting all the quilts in non-Christmas fabric, too, but we ended up deciding to put more projects in the book so there were more things for people to choose from, and we opted to go that way.
Yeah, I like that idea, too, because, sometimes you get hectic towards a holiday and you want to make something, small is good.
Yes, yes. It's been really good.
The
C&T has been great. Well, there is one. It's funny. My daughter loved the one that made the cover. She kept saying, that's going to be the cover quilt. And, and she knew it. And I love that quilt, but I also loved another quilt called Trimming the Tree, which has very large ornaments that are pieced and then appliqued for very large ornaments. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of, because I loved making each ornament as a separate mm-hmm. project, and they're also used on pillows in the book, that's kind of my secret favorite. Also, I just can't wait to see what people do with it, because it's one of those quilts where you could see it in many different fabric collections, and it would look different in each one, and I always think that's exciting to see what people make from it. So I'd go with Trimming the Tree.
There you go. Even like in your fabric lines, don't you have like one piece in the line that you're like, oh my gosh, that's my favorite, and then often there's one that's like, okay, if I had to rank them, it would not be number one.
Or whatever you're sewing on right that moment. It can be a favorite. Every day you have a different favorite. It's like asking a favorite color. And, you know, that's so personal, and we all change and jump all over the place.
I was looking in the book, and what caught my eye, let me see if I can find it real quickly. There's one that you have a really interesting piecing technique that when you look at the quilt, you wouldn't think it's how you put it together. It looks like it's called Modern Madness. I think that's the name
of
it.
Yes. And it kind of looks like a zigzag going down like rickrack.
Right.
Big prints, and I think it features Kate Spain fabric in that one. And I used, by the way, I should say, in the book, a lot of the Christmas prints don't stay out for more than one season, but I do list all the fabric designers. So if you see one of the designers whose fabric you like, chances are they have another collection this year that has the same style that might appeal to you. But that book, that quilt was unusual in the way it looks, and it's one of those where you have an idea of how it should look in the end, and then you have to figure out how to sew it.
Yeah.
and make it. And that's sometimes you end up with things that surprise you. But I was able to do that because it's set on point.
Right. It's set on point, and the fabrics. There are actually some strips, but it doesn't look like strips in the end because the prints meld together, so they don't, it all looks like big blocks. It looks very complicated.
It looks way more complicated than it actually is.
Than it actually is.
I don't sew complicated things most of the time. So.
Yeah, me either. It's like, I want to have fun, This is
yes,
fun.
Exactly.
Now,
new
tell me a little
fun.
Bit about your trapunto method, or why what you do to do trapunto and why you like it.
Well, I love it because it makes a quilt look much more intricate than it really is, and much harder. People, you don't see it in every quilt, but I think the secret for me, what I do is I take the piece top and I lay it on high loft, either polyester or wool batting, and then I sew it with wash away thread just around the area that's going to be trapunto. So for those large ornaments I was talking about on the Trimming the Tree quilt, you're basically just sewing right around that whole ornament, and then you cut away the excess batting, and you layer it on the cotton batting, like you normally would, and quilt it as desired. And I think it gives extra loft, and I usually try to do it on pretty large shapes, so it's not very intricate. I will say I learned this through trial and error. You don't want to hit it with a hot iron after you've done this, because it will melt the polyester batting. But you learn that the hard way.
Yeah.
But it just adds a little bit of extra dimension to the quilt, and it's so fun when you're quilting it and you kind of see that. I also use that on the wreath quilt that's Dresden's, and they're wreaths. So in real life, if you saw it, the wreaths are actually elevate a little. I think there's a picture in the inside flap of the book where you can kind of see that a little.
Yeah, I could definitely tell with the wreaths. There's one of the pictures has like a nice angle, and you can really see the texture, the loft. So that's really,
yes,
really nice.
It was fun, and you don't have to have. I sewed every project in the book on a Bernina 580. And I quilted the small projects, and I had a fantastic long-arm quilter named Deborah Norris quilt the large quilts, and she did a great job. But you don't have to have a super fancy machine in order to do some of these techniques. You can do it with a straight stitch.
Yeah, that's really great to know, because a lot of people just, haven't developed, some of the techniques yet. They're still learning, so it's really good. It's really good to be able to do it simple. Now, I have like one little question, because this just fascinates me, Amanda, that I asked you if you had a hobby, and you said that before you quilted, you made 16th century band samplers on linen. And, that does not look anything like what you do now. I'm like thinking, tans and warm tones
It's touching those beautiful fabrics and the silks. That's where the handwork comes in. It's so tactile, and especially in the world we live in where everything is electronic. Mm-hmm. There's such a pleasure in working with your hands.
Yes.
And I have to say, I very much try to divide my time into tasks that I really need to think about, like when I'm designing. Mm-hmm. And then just, the chain piecing we all do. And there's something meditative about just following the directions and, having this routine. It's that same quality in piecing as it is following those directions for those samplers. I know it sounds crazy, but I love them too. So, I love the decorative arts. So
it is. It is. This has been great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, this is wonderful. Everybody go visit Amanda and see. You won't see her band linen samplers, but you'll see her artwork.
No.
AmandaMurphyDesign.com. I think you need to put one on your blog now, okay?
Okay. Okay.
All right.
That sounds good. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. We're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And I have Roseanne Kermes back. Yay! From Rosebud's Cottage. Hi, Roseanne. Are you there, Roseanne? Did I squeal too loud? Did I miss her? Oh, she's not coming in. So hold on for a second. Hi, Roseanne. Oh. Okay, so Roseanne and I are going to talk a little bit about, we're going to get her back. We're calling Roseanne back. We're going to be talking a little bit about travel because many of us do something over the summer. We go on travel. So, hi, Roseanne. Oh, no, she's not coming in. So we're going to, when she's there, they'll tell me. So when you go on travel, Roseanne and I got talking. We're like, you know, do you go to quilt shops? Do you take your sewing machine? You know, we had like sort of all these questions, trying to see what we do, what other people do when they go on a trip. Like right now, I'm getting ready to go to Texas to teach. I live in Virginia, and I'm going to Texas to teach. Oh, looks like we have Roseanne now. Hi, Roseanne.
Hi there.
Hey.
Technical difficulties. I was there, sort of.
That's why it's called live, right?
That's right.
So I was
you're going on the road now for a trip.
I am, and you're going on vacation at the end of the month. So
yes, I am.
Yes. So we thought we'd sort of bounce back and forth a couple of things people think about when they get ready to go on a trip. And one of them is on Facebook. We asked, when people are traveling, do they collect anything at the quilt shops? Do you collect anything?
Well, I love to collect patterns. But I have a friend, when we go shopping, she likes to collect fat quarters. So I think it's kind of like what you're interested in. I like to look at new designs and just see how they look and stuff. I also like to take photos of the shops just to remember or to put on my blog, but I always ask permission and stuff for that. And then I like to look at displays. The displays in the stores I think are very fun.
That's a shop owner in you.
Yeah, I know. I can't help it. It's my business.
I like display. But on Facebook, one of the funniest things was 150 people said they collect
receipts, credit card receipts.
Credit card receipts. No, I don't believe it. They buy things in the store? Yes, yes, yes.
They actually buy the things, but
yes.
I thought that was pretty funny that was like one of the number one comments. But, hands down, fat quarters are the thing that most quilters like to buy. Probably they're easy to pack, easy to use, I think, don't you?
Well, I agree. But the other thing, too, is why I like to pick up a piece of fabric is because you'll see fabric that is not in your stores. I mean,
exactly.
There's so much fabric that your local stores can't carry everything. So you go somewhere else and see a whole different personality and types of fabric.
Don't you think different areas of the country kind of the shop owners there buy differently?
Yes.
It's great to see something that you haven't seen before. I thought there was one comment that I thought was very interesting. One of the readers said, I buy a fat quarter from every store. When I get home, I use my embroidery machine to embroider the shop name and talent on a piece of it and hang the piece up in my sewing room. That would be a great kind of like an autograph quilt, don't you think?
Yeah, travel quilt. So you have that great memory. Wow.
Yeah,
I like that.
Fun.
That's a lot. It's a little more work than I might do, but it's a great fun thing.
But that was interesting. A lot of other people enjoyed hearing that too. They thought it was a great idea.
Didn't ever think of that before. Now, people collect the shop pins.
I was so surprised.
Yeah.
I was just looking at my shop pins the other day and it's like, oh, I should probably order some more. And I was like, do I really need them? Will people want them? I had no idea that people collect these shop pins. Do you?
Yeah. No, I don't, but people give me pins. Like, I have a lot of guild pins because I teach at a lot of guilds. And so I have a whole container of gorgeous pins, a clear container filled with guild pins. And if I go to a shop and they happen to have one and give it to me, that would be in my container too. So,
Nice.
Yes.
All right. That's a great idea.
Yeah, just sort of, you can, you know, it's pretty, sits out in my room here. Okay, sewing machines. Let's discuss. Do people take their sewing machine on vacation?
Well, was a question they asked on American Patchwork and Quilting Facebook a few weeks ago. Apparently, a lot of people do. I have taken mine on vacation, but I have to say it just comes along as a piece of traveling luggage because usually I get to where I'm going and then I don't use it because I'm busy doing something else or napping or reading or you know, looking at what's in that area. So I forget to use it.
Vacation being something different than retreat, you know, because obviously, you know, quilters, we all go on retreat. We love retreats. But as vacation be like, you know, you might be with family or other friends who don't sew.
In that discussion, it seemed like it was like half and half that just as many people took them on vacation as left them home. So I thought that was interesting.
I know some people who will actually take, you know, like a trip maybe with their spouse, and the spouse has something that they're doing that doesn't interest the quilter. And so the quilter uses that time. And I actually, one of the ladies on my internet group, she took her daughters to one of those for like a weekend to one of those parks, those water parks or whatever. And she sewed in the room while the kids went to the water park.
Yeah, see, that kind of sounds like something I would probably enjoy doing.
Yeah, so it is vacation, and it's just a, you know, I would do that, too. I thought that would be kind of fun.
Well, you know, I'd love to take it along on a trip where I know I could sew the whole time, but that's kind of a retreat.
Right. And it's more, you know, sew the whole. I just have, now, do you take handwork with you on your vacations?
I usually pack something to work on. I don't do well sewing in the car. So if we're on a road trip, I just don't do well with that. I usually do it at night in the room. But a lot of times when I take it along, by the time we get back to our hotel or wherever, I'm usually too busy looking at all the loot that I bought that day or loading my pictures up onto my computer or, you know, just relaxing and stuff. But I forget to do it until I get ready to come back home, and then I feel bad that I took it.
Thing, because, you know, heaven forbid, and you can get stuff done in just little periods of time if you sort of focus on it.
But you sew in the car, don't you?
I do. I'm one of those people that I can. If the roads are wickedly curved, forget about it. But for the most part, I can do handwork in the car.
You're lucky.
Yeah, I can read, I can do all that kind of stuff, but not if it's really curvy, you know, that would be, you know, I took it on the ships, you know, and to go on the cruise ship, you know, I can stitch on there, and, you know, that doesn't bother me either. So do you stitch when you fly? Do you take anything for the plane?
I do sometimes. I usually, you know, I take something along, but sometimes it's depending on what kind of flight you're on. You either don't have a lot of time to pull it out, or it just seems very crowded. It depends really who's sitting around me. Mm-hmm. But I do use that time if it's something that's kind of simple to stitch, like where I'm embroidering or don't have to think about it or doesn't have a lot of parts. I don't mind stitching on the plane. It makes the time go faster.
Yeah, I read. I don't stitch on the plane. I just can't be bothered to get it all out. I think it's that just hold that kind of space thing, you know? It's like, it's too much. Elbow the guy next to me, you know. So how are you using technology when you go on vacation for your quilt, to get your quilting in?
Well, I have a couple girlfriends that I like to travel with, and I actually do this with my husband, too, when he's in the car. But when we're going on a trip and we know that there's quilt shops in the area, one time I looked, there was so much technology out in that car. We had iPads, we had iPhones, we had smartphones. And what usually one of us will do is pull up our iPad and type in to in the map section. We will type in quilt shops, and then it populates the map. And we start to look at where we are in relationship to those quilts, to those shops and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, try and narrow it down. And I like to, before we actually commit to a store, I like to kind of look on on their website to see what kind of store, because we usually have different interests. So I want to make sure it's fair that if, you know, I like a little more traditional, they like a little more bright, you know, that we have a balance for that. So we look around at that. And I do like to look at stores that are quilt sampler stores. I know it's kind of funny that way, but yeah, I feel that they've kind of been tested, and you know, they've been in the magazine. I've seen the magazine, and I want to see what the stores look like in real life. So I tend to steer us toward those stores. But once we make a decision, we just key in, ask for the directions, and usually drive right up to the door. But I don't know about you, but I have a knack too for kind of knowing that there's a quilt shop nearby. You know, I can actually look.
Oh, no, I don't have that. I need that, Roseanne.
my husband in Rapid City one time was just flabbergasted. We were at a corner, and I turned my head, and there was a quilt shop, and I got out of the car, and I said, come get me after you get gas. And he's never forgotten that. But we're getting ready to go on a trip, so I have already keyed up the different quilt shops that are on along our route, just in case we have to stop. I always try to act surprised if suddenly there is a quilt shop there, even though we all know I usually know ahead of time. But I don't know. I think, you know, traveling like that is fun. It lets you explore a hobby that you love, you know.
I think so. I totally think so. And just being able to sort of explore and bring back something from your trip you really, really like. And if it's fabric or a pattern, you'll use it later. So it's going
to
be fun.
I think one of those readers on Facebook, too, she said that she likes to go into stores that have fabric that are depicting, like, the area. And then a number of them like having stores where the patterns are from local designers. So they're patterns that they haven't seen, you know, in their neighborhood. But I like that, too, because there's a lot of people who quietly design without having a distributor or aren't in all the stores. And I just find those, it's kind of like special little prizes when I when I see those. And then I tend to, if they have like a lot of patterns, I could buy all of them, you know.
Right.
So I do my part to help the economy when I travel.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I'm just getting ready to go to Texas, and I'm actually teaching in a quilt store this time. So,
oh, nice.
Yes, it's always nice because I can get really in depth. You know, I don't have to. Well, you know, this is. I mean, it's not vacation, but it's the same thing. You know, I mean, I get to go and see a new area when I work. So, well, Roseanne, this has been fun to talk about travel.
Thanks so much. I hope everybody gets a chance to visit a shop when they're vacationing this summer.
Yes, drag the family with you. They'll understand.
Well, you have a safe trip, Pat.
Thanks. You too, Roseanne. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be back next week with an all-new show. Visit us online at allpeoplequilt.com. We'll see you there.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.